Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, August 6, 2026. $1 million requested for proposed Savoy Nursing Home. Advocates for Aging Care plans to make pitch at Board's August 11th meeting. Advocates for Aging Care is asking the Champaign County Board for $1 million to help a new skilled nursing home in Savoy get off the ground. The request is part of the group's $3 million capital campaign, which Committee Chair Kathy Emanuel said is intended to support our operating expenses during the startup period. She told the News Gazette that the organization is pitching to everybody and the county board is on the list because it is in the middle of budget season. Advocates for Aging Care also plans to make requests to other public bodies such as local village boards and city councils. "We're asking individuals and companies and everybody in the community for help," Emanuel said. "We think this project needs community-wide support to be effective." According to Emanuel, about $800,000 has been committed from donors so far. She said that while the organization has previously discussed a need for $2.5 million in working capital, aiming for $3 million gives them a cushion just in case. In addition to the fundraising efforts, Advocates for Aging Care and its development partner, FAPROP LLC, are also working on a deal to buy land for the project. The deal has not been finalized yet, but Emanuel still hopes to break ground in the fall and open in spring 2028. The $26.6 million project includes 120 beds and will be located on 10 acres near the northeast corner of West Church Street and South Mattis Avenue. The project concept features 10 home-like cottages in a campus residential setting per the application to the state. Each cottage will include 12 units, with each unit having its own private room and bathroom, and common spaces such as group dining area, a living area, and outdoor space. Two of the cottages will be located near each other with a rehabilitation area in between, providing therapy to residents who require rehabilitation services. Advocates for Aging Care plans to be the nonprofit operator for the facility and contract Southern Administrative Services, which is a related entity to FAPROP, to manage it. Plans also include working with Aging Inn to implement the greenhouse model. In addition to the cottage housing style, the approach involves employing certified nursing assistants as universal workers who provide personalized care to the residents and handle a variety of tasks, the project application stated. Advocates for Aging Care will be making its pitch during the time for public comment at the County Board's August 11th Committee of the Whole meeting and is asking members of the public to show up in support. The meeting begins at 6:30 p.m. in the Bennett Administrative Center in downtown Urbana. Those who wish to speak are advised to arrive by 6:15 p.m. to sign in, the organization said. The item is not on the actual meeting agenda, Emanuel clarified. A recent e-newsletter from Advocates for Aging Care stated the county residents have paid a voter-approved property tax levy to support skilled nursing care ever since a 2002 referendum, with the levy staying in place despite the sale of the county's nursing home in 2019. The organization said that it believes part of this tax levy's revenue should therefore be used to help bring skilled nursing beds back to Champaign County. County Director of Administration Michelle Jett told the News Gazette that the 2002 tax increase was to the county's overall limiting rate, which comprises many different types of levies. Once the nursing home was sold, the overall limiting rate remained the same. How it was reached by the numerous levies that make up the tax rate was adjusted, she explained. This is a process done every year when the levy is drafted, because to balance the needs of the county with the limitations imposed by the property tax extension limitation law. A page detailing the makeup of the total county levy in the fiscal year 2026 budget does not include a category designated to the former county nursing home. Chet added that the county is very supportive of Advocates for Aging Care's work. The county board contributed $45,000 for the senior needs assessment and nursing home market study in Champaign County, and we congratulate them on their successful efforts to acquire a certificate of need, she said. Loose Knit Group combines crafting, charity, and community. Every week, laughter fills a room at the Windsor of Savoy as residents and visitors gather with knitting needles, crochet hooks, and yarn in hand. The group, known as the Loose Knit Knitting Circle, has spent more than a decade crafting hats, scarves, blankets, and other handmade items that warm the hearts of more than just the people who receive them. "It makes you happy twice," said Gail Orsted, 85. "You're happy when you're doing it and happy when you give it." The group began about 11 years ago when resident Pat McQuillan, 98, noticed there wasn't a knitting club after she moved into the senior living community. Having belonged to knitting groups before, she helped organize a handful of residents to knit mittens for the Mitten Tree at OSF Healthcare. Over time, the group grew, with efforts expanded to include an annual handmade item sale to support the Alzheimer's Association. "At first, it started out very small in here, and each year it's gotten larger," said Lucille Frasca, 93, one of the group's earliest members. "Last year, we sold over $3,000 worth of handmade items, which the money went directly to the Alzheimer's sale. The group meets once a week, but its work extends far beyond the annual fundraiser that takes place from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday. Throughout the year, the group donates handmade items to local organizations, including schools, children's programs, and other nonprofits that serve families in need. Other residents also buy many of the handmade gifts for their children, grandchildren, and friends. For Sue Carlson, who didn't know anyone when she moved to the Windsor of Savoy, the group offered more than an opportunity to knit. "I thought I'm going to meet people. I need to get in some groups," Carlson said. The 86-year-old recalled how she learned a little knitting from her mother as a child and joined the club helped her refresh those skills. She has been attending the weekly gatherings for about 8.5 years now. Like Carlson, Sinave Lund learned how to knit and crochet as a child. Lund was 23 when she moved with her husband from Norway to the United States. The couple originally planned to stay for 2 years, then decided to settle permanently in the country. "I didn't even remember when I started knitting since I was small in Norway. We start early." The 92-year-old said, "I came here and I knew there was a knitting group and I wanted to join. It's a lot of fun." Not everyone arrives knowing how to knit, including Joe Menenga, who joined the group about 3 years ago after quietly watching members from the hallway. I had watched these people, and they're always smiling, laughing, and it looks like joy," Menenga said. "And so that attracted me. I just came in with the knowledge of the word knitting. With the help of a member who offered informal private sessions, Menenga learned to use a loom to make her first hat and is currently working on her second scarf. The weekly gatherings are anything but quiet. Noisy," one member said, prompting laughter throughout the room. "Conversation flows as freely as the yarn, with members sharing stories, catching up on life, and helping one another through challenging patterns. While some residents stop by briefly and decide crafting is not for them, long-term members emphasize that the main thread keeping the group together for over a decade is community. Official recognition. Champaign Mayor Deb Finan holds the Paul Simon Jim Edgar Statesmanship Award. She was presented this week at the annual Edgar Fellows Dinner in Champaign. She was honored for building a reputation for thoughtful leadership, collaboration, and bringing people together to address complex community issues. And there's a photo on the front page. Forward Sophia McMillan runs onto the field after being announced with fellow starters before the Illini soccer team's exhibition against Central Michigan on Wednesday in Demerigen Park in Champaign. The match signaled the start of the 26-27 athletic season and served as the first of two warm-ups for the soccer team's August 13th season opener against Georgia. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. editor Jeff DeLacio's most ambitious project yet, 100 Fixes for College Sports, publishes in Friday's premium edition and at newsgazette.com. It's a 16-page special section that DeLacio began working on in March, reaching out to coaches, athletes, athletic directors, alums, agents, commissioners, chancellors, presidential cabinet members, referees, politicians, donors, media, and other influencers. Brad Stevens, president of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics, was first to respond, triggering an avalanche of cooperation. Jack Nicklaus, Don Staley, Dusty May, Condoleezza Rice, Josh Whitman, in total 375 heavy hitters, answered DeLacio's questions in forthright, insightful, and refreshing ways. The best part of this thing is that it's entirely on the record in an era when, if you read anything on college sports at the national level, it's all sourced, DeLacio said. Everything they gave is on the record. We'll continue this conversation in these pages and on News Gazette Radio and on WDWS and WSOY. Teacher of the Week, Ryan O'Connor, English Language Arts, Novak Academy, Champaign. Being the teacher he himself needed. After spending his summer hiking, leading trauma training for the Illinois Federation of Teachers, and teaching his twin daughters how to drive, Ryan O'Connell will start his 16th year teaching English Language Arts at the Champaign School District's Novak Academy this fall. After overcoming difficulties related to his dyslexia as a child, Ryan O'Connor has spent his career teaching students to overcome their own hurdles. The native of the Chicago suburb of hometown is set to start his 16th year at Novak Academy this fall, where he teaches English Language Arts. I find my work important, and I became a teacher because I have dyslexia. English Language Arts has always been a very difficult subject for me. I had convinced myself that I'd never be really good at it and sort of resigned myself to that. When I was in seventh grade, I had a teacher who agreed with my self-talk and told me so quite frankly. She told me she believed I'd never really be any good at this subject and was willing to push me along and help things easier for me. I can't tell you why this was such a formative event in my life. She was literally telling me things that I had been telling myself for quite some time. Excuse me. But to be frank, it pissed me off. I didn't like being told I couldn't do something, and from that day forward, I decided I wasn't going to let some genetic hand of cards determine what I could and couldn't do. I learned the difference between running into walls and climbing over them. This pretty well drove my life from then on. My career trajectory has been basically to provide the opposite experience that I had in that moment. Working in alternative education, I've run into hundreds of kids who have had the same negative self-talk that I've had, but instead of telling them they'll never be able to, I fight with and for them to try and show them that the best version of them is very much within their grasp. I don't make it easy, but I work to make it accessible. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, in this age of AI, I've found I have to constantly keep myself on my toes. I am constantly trying to find new and unique ways to develop the same skills that have been present in ELA, but try to translate them into a world we are living in today that still requires my students' voice and creativity. A lot of this comes down to presentation. I still have classes to do things like writing research papers, but then I try to add some uniqueness by learning how to present that research beyond just academic writing. Learning how to present that information on a website by adding different media to help represent that idea. Learning how to take academic writing and translate it into blog writing so that they can reach wider audiences. This last 7-week session, I decided to really step out of my comfort zone. I had my junior students read the novel Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. The novel is a nonfiction story that follows the story of Mr. Stevenson, a lawyer who works for the Equal Justice Initiative and is his pursuit of freeing a man who is wrongfully convicted of murder. The alternating chapters talk about different aspects of Mr. Stevenson's work, how women are treated in the justice system, how people with mental disabilities are treated in the justice system, how children are treated in the justice system, etc. Students in that class partnered up and chose one of those topics to become experts in. The goal was to create a podcast episode about the issues covered in that chapter. Students had to learn to pitch an idea to a group of adults and respond to feedback. They had to analyze the text, do independent research on the history, impacts, and exploration of solutions to that topic. They had to script their podcast, and working with the organization Street College here in CU, they learned to record their podcast. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when my students hate how much they love the work we are doing in class. My students will constantly tell me how hard my class is. They will complain about how much I expect of them. They'll likely be cussing me out while they are doing it. But when they finish a project or paper in my class, the look of pride they try not to show me is everything I need to know I'm doing the right thing. I keep students engaged by just being real. My students know they are going to get the truth, and that truth will always be through the lens of helping them grow into the best version of themselves. Something else I'm passionate about is my family. They are my rock. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school were, I have two favorites, both from my high school days at Oaklawn Community High School. Barb Mateer, my choir teacher, and Tom Druzian, my theater director. It was kind of a fluke that I participated in either choir as an elective or theater as an after-school activity. I never had any real interest prior to doing them. One seemed like an easy elective, boy was I wrong, and theater was something to do after a track injury. But I'm really glad I did because they really taught me how to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. I pushed myself in ways I never thought a once quiet and reclusive kid thought I could. They definitely drove how I teach, how I parent, and how I live. To them, I'm forever grateful. If I weren't a teacher, I would be it's so hard to even think about that, being 21 years into a career I love. I think if I wasn't doing this, I might be doing something in wildlife conservation. I'm spending my summer saying prayers in the passenger seat while teaching my twin girls how to drive. Other than that, I'm doing some traveling to some fun hiking places, and I'm ending my summer leading trauma training with the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Capital News, Illinois. I'm embarrassed by it, is the quote. Welch apologizes for behavior towards staffer who brought sex harassment complaint versus ex-representative Benton. Illinois House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch is apologizing for his interactions with a former staff member who brought a sexual harassment complaint against ex-representative Harry Benton to his office. Welch told Capital News Illinois it wasn't until he read a Chicago Tribune article last month that he realized his actions, including reacting to the former staffer's Instagram photos with heart eyes and inviting her to a bar through an encrypted messaging app, made her feel uncomfortable. When I read that, I felt terrible, said Welch, a Hillside Democrat. That certainly was not my intent, but I made her feel uncomfortable, and I have to own that. I regret that, and I'm embarrassed by it, and I apologize for it, and I think that's taking responsibility. Welch said he's changed his social media behavior since the Chicago Tribune's July 17th report, which focused heavily on the fact that the staffer initially complained about Benton's actions toward her in 2023. The staffer, who once served as an intern in Welch's office, told the paper she had several interactions with the speaker that made her uncomfortable after she left Benton's staff. When she asked him for career advice, for example, he reportedly asked her to move a text conversation to the private messaging app Signal, where messages disappear after a period of time, and meet her at a bar to discuss her request. That Tribune report put even more pressure on Welch, who was already facing questions for his handling of sexual harassment claims against Benton. It also wasn't the first time Welch faced questions about his behavior. He was accused of domestic violence in 2002, though never charged. Years later, as a school board member in Proviso Township, he was accused in a lawsuit of sexually harassing two school employees, though it was also dismissed. A group of Democratic women questioned Welch about the 2002 incident in a huddle on the House floor in January 2021 before committing to supporting him as a speaker. Welch's own interactions were only part of a heavily scrutinized series of events over the last month involving Benton, the former staffer, and a legislative inspector general report that was made public last week. Handling complaints. The LIG report confirmed the Tribune's reporting that Benton's former district office employee reported a series of inappropriate comments and sexual harassment instances to Welch's office in April 2023. However, Welch's office didn't address the allegations with Benton until July that year. According to Welch, his chief of staff at the time heard through secondhand sources that there were issues in Benton's office. The chief of staff reached out to Benton's staffer and asked her to put what happened in writing. Welch said his office waited months to address the issue with Benton because she wanted to wait until she left her job in Benton's office, fearing retaliation. Nevertheless, Benton remained part of the Democratic caucus, and Welch-controlled political funds spent $1.4 million in 2024 to help him get reelected. Welch said there had not been any formal complaints against Benton at the time, as the staff member did not want to file a complaint with the LIG. When you're thinking about 2023, at that time I had an unofficial complaint and a member adamantly denied it, Welch said, and so when you think about a person's due process, you have to honor that. Welch said that 2023 documentation helped build a case this year when he learned about new allegations against Benton. According to documents released by the Legislative Ethics Commission, Benton sexually harassed two different lobbyists at bars, and the incidents were reported to the Speaker's office by two state representatives. Welch said his office learned about the incidents on February 19th, and he met with his chief of staff, chief ethics officer, and chief counsel the following day. That same day, he said his chief legal counsel verbally informed the LIG. The House was not in session on February 20th, and Welch said he met with Benton when the House returned on February 24th and kicked him out of the caucus. A written report wasn't filed with the LIG until March 4th, documents showed. Exploring changes. Welch argued that process for dealing with complaints, which he kept in place after their implementation under former Speaker Mike Madigan, were not adequate, and his office is working to come up with stronger procedures. Sexual harassment in the House was a problem for Madigan in 2018, and it eroded trust with lawmakers who ultimately forced him out in 2021 as a corruption scandal grew. One of Madigan's top political operatives, Kevin Quinn, and his chief of staff, Tim Mapes, were both hit with their own allegations of inappropriate behavior. 8 years ago, Benton's case and Welch's response to it have again put workplace conduct and sexual harassment in the House back in the spotlight. It takes all of us to change a culture, Welch said. Everyone that sees something should say something. We should have an environment where people are comfortable to say something, and it's not going to be fixed by one person alone. It's going to take all of us, and for me, that's where the systemic failures came into place. Welch said one of his top priorities is centralizing human resources operations in the House. Currently, district staffers report HR concerns like sexual harassment to the representative that employs them. Welch said that complicates an already volatile situation, and he is looking at ways to have district staff members report to the Speaker's office instead. Welch is also establishing a House Democratic Working Group on Culture and Accountability that will be led by Representative Dagmara Avalar, Democrat Romeoville. Welch's working groups typically form a package of policy recommendations that eventually turn into bills, some of which could be on the docket for the November and December veto session. Workplace culture goes beyond sexual harassment, and a lot of the conversations we've been having with members these last 2 weeks, they believe that too. And it goes beyond sexual harassment, Welch said. It goes to bullying, it goes to hostile work environment. There's a lot of things that need to be addressed to change the culture. Welch said he's also bringing in an outside investigator to make more recommendations for changes. Welch's future. Representative Fred Crespo, Democrat Hoffman of States, is the only Democratic representative to call for Welch to resign. The two aren't on speaking terms after Welch removed him from the caucus last year for working on a budget bill without his permission. At best, his failure to adequately respond to sexual harassment complaints is the consequence of poor management and irresponsibility, Crespo said in an opinion piece published by the Tribune last week. At worst, the speaker doesn't take sexual harassment seriously, and his office normalizes such behavior. Other Democrats have criticized Welch's actions and handling of the situation, but stopping short of calling on him to resign. The speaker must demonstrate a sincere desire to repair the harm he has done, and to correct the broken system in which we are all operating, Representative Kelly Cassidy, Democrat Chicago, said in a statement last week. To date, this has not been the spirit of his response. Instead, we have heard a series of excuses, victim blaming, and a failure to publicly acknowledge shortcomings. This has been disappointing. Representative Mary Beth Kenty, Democrat Arlington Heights, the chair of the House Democratic Women's Caucus, said in a statement that accountability must go beyond Benton. Questions still remain about how these allegations were addressed, and legislators and the public deserve a complete and transparent explanation from those involved, she said. Welch said he plans to continue to serve at the pleasure of the caucus. New elections for Speaker are typically held in January when a new General Assembly is sworn in. Sacrifices betrayed. More than 50 military spouses and parents detained by ICE, with several deported for questionable reasons. President Donald Trump's administration has detained dozens of parents and spouses of active duty U.S. troops as it rolls back immigration protections for military families to pursue its mass deportation agenda, an Associated Press investigation found. More than 50 parents and spouses of active duty service members have been detained since Trump took office for a second term. At least six have been deported and one has self-deported, the AP found in this first accounting for such detentions, which the government does not track. At least eight immediate family members of U.S. service members remain in federal immigration custody. Parents and spouses of people in the military have generally been shielded from deportation under bipartisan consensus for decades, but the AP found that they're now routinely being detained for months as they try to adjust their legal status through the policies available to service members' close relatives, and even as the military continues to recruit by advertising immigration benefits for enlistees' families. Experts warn that the reversal could undermine military preparedness. Even as the U.S. is at war in Iran, it has left military members without emotional support and caretakers for their children, delayed deployments, and forced some to take leave. How can I even focus on my military career because I have to worry about how my wife is doing, said Army Sergeant Hadar Leonel Trujillo Juarez, who has been stationed in Fort Bliss, Texas, when his wife was detained in July in front of their six-year-old daughter outside a Walmart. A handful of detentions of service members' spouses have prompted public backlash and led to intervention by Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen to secure their release. The Department of Homeland Security has said it does not compile data on these cases. The AP obtained information by analyzing thousands of federal court cases compiled by habeas dockets, a project run by the Immigration Justice Transparency Initiative. By reviewing existing media coverage and by verifying information with family members and attorneys, the actual number is likely much higher than the 52 cases AP found. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, August 6, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.